eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Eat your inside pass to everything Saints football.
See you later, bye. Touchdown, Rashid Shaheed.
We'll take you to places most fans never go. To practice, to the sideline, to the locker room. Following every twist, turn, and touchdown of the Saints season.
That is going to be a touchdown, Taysom Hill. Taysom TD.
Welcome to Inside Black and Gold.
To the end zone, and that is a touchdown for Chris Olave.
Now, here are your hosts, Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak.
Oh, baby!
Hey, y'all, who dat? And welcome in. This is Inside Black and Gold, the calm before the storm edition. We have the NFL draft in 24 hours. From the time I am recording this, but I did want to get you a quick episode today to go over a handful of things that are pressing, that happened, that are leading us into the NFL draft. I'm Jeff Nowak. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeff_Nowak. First things first, if you haven't subscribed yet, please do that. Whether you're watching on YouTube, listening on whatever podcast player that you enjoy the most, hit the subscribe button. If you're on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating, leave a review. Tell us what you'd like to see more of. Tell us what you hate. Tell us what you love. Hopefully there's more of that second part than the first part. But either way, let me know. The feedback is critical. It really helps me figure out what y'all are looking for so we don't continue to do stuff that annoys you and not do stuff that you actually want to see. So whether you tell me that on Twitter, whether you send me a DM, whether you leave it in a review, that feedback is really helpful. Especially we're getting into the draft. We're kind of resetting after this point to kind of figure out what next year is going to look like. So that feedback is critical. But let's get into it. I'm solo today, giving Steve Geller the day off. Going to be a wild next 4 days. A lot of coverage for the station, for WWL. So we're going to find time to record. I'm hopefully going to be able to do a live stream after the first round to kind of react to whatever pick that is. Maybe more than one pick. We'll find out. But today we're going to go over a couple things. James Hurst retiring. That's unexpected for me. I don't know if it's unexpected for the team, but we're going to find out. We're also going to talk about, okay, is there going to be a lot of trades in this first round? Sure sounds like that's going to be the case. And how is that going to impact the Saints? We're going to talk about that in the first segment. And then in the final two segments, we're going to go through Mickey Loomis's press conference. It's the standard didn't say much situation, but there were some interesting answers in that. So the second segment, we're going to talk about stuff like their philosophy on trading up, trading down. What do we expect? How the new coaching staff might impact some of the decision-making. I asked him about that and I thought his answer was interesting. Final segment, we're going to talk about, okay, when do the Saints go outside of their comfort zone when they're drafting players? And what exactly do they have to see for that to happen? We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some non-updates, really, on Ryan Ramczyk, but then some interesting discourse on Marshawn Lattimore and a potential trade. So we're going to get into all that in the second and third segment. If that's what you're here for, feel free to skip ahead. But first things first, we do need to talk about James Hurst, Mr. Do-It-All pretty well, Do-None really well. You know, it's kind of in the story of his career. He is retiring. 10 years in the NFL, he announced his retirement on social media today. He also went on with Nick Underhill and Mike Triplett, New Orleans Football, to kind of break down why he retired, you know, some of the reasoning behind it. It sounds like this was something that he was open about, so it should not have blindsided the Saints, but it's definitely not something I expected given James Hurst under contract for another year. Played reasonably well last year, and he has a significant role. It sounds like he wants to spend more time with his wife. They want to start a family, that sort of thing. 10 years was always kind of a target for him. So, hey, that's the end for James Hurst. And we'll kind of get into it here, you know, because the issue for the Saints is not necessarily that you can't replace James Hurst. It's that the numbers at offensive line are really starting to be questionable, right? One of the things that's going to be difficult to replace with James Hurst is this is a man who, over his 4 years with the Saints, he's been there since 2020. He started with the Ravens, was an undrafted free agent out of North Carolina. You'd say his career was a success story based on where he came from. A UDFA playing 10 years and starting for a good chunk of that. That's impressive. But what he's been able to do with the Saints is not necessarily excel at any particular position, but it's the ability to play any of them in a pinch. He's taken reps, taken snaps at left tackle, at left guard, at right guard, at right tackle. The only position he hasn't played is center, but I'm pretty sure if you asked him, he might be like, yeah, I could do that. And that's tough to replace. That versatility is tough to replace. I did not think he should go into the season as the starter, but I did anticipate, okay, he's a good swing tackle who can provide you depth there. No more. You do not have that depth. You already know you don't really have any depth at left tackle. Andres Pete is a free agent. Maybe he's an option as you go down the road, and he would also be an option at guard. So if you're of the belief that the Saints should give Andres Pete a call and bring Andres Pete back, this really only piles onto that because he's another guy who can play tackle or guard in a pinch. And you're really starting to wonder, okay, what's the plan at guard? You know, I did a mock draft 2 days ago, right? And I traded into the third round and I picked Mason Smith. One, a guy who went the next pick in that mock draft was Christian Mahogany out of Boston College. So if James Hurst had announced his retirement a week ago, I probably would have still made that trade, but I would have done it to draft Christian Mahogany, a guy the Saints have had in for a visit and, you know, profiles pretty well as a starting guard down the line, maybe not right away, but a guy who you could see develop into that job. But who's going to play that position next year? You know, we talked about Trey Turner. Maybe you try to bring Trey Turner back. Hopefully that rehab on that quad, or I think it was a torn quad, hopefully that has gone well and he could potentially slot in there, but who knows, right? So you look at Nick Saldiveri, a guy the Saints traded up for last year, felt pretty confident in, but he never saw the field. That doesn't mean he can't play. It just means he was not expected to play last year, and I don't necessarily believe he was ready. And for the most part, you had decent health at the guard spot, so you really didn't need to go too far down the line to find that time for him. That said, you know, we talked all offseason about left tackle and right tackle being big question marks. And that's why you look at the Saints draft board and you say, okay, 14, there should be a quality, like blue chip type tackle prospect available, and you're going to go get them. Now you start to wonder about guard, right? You don't really know who your starter is at left tackle. You don't really know who your starter is at right tackle. Now you don't really know who your starter is at left guard. Granted, you weren't necessarily diving in on James Hurst as the starter, but you knew he could be in a pinch. So realistically, the only two positions on your offensive line that you feel like are set are center Eric McCoy and right guard Cesar Ruiz. And those are solid options. But neither of those guys is those are solid options. And Eric McCoy was a Pro Bowl center last year. I think you have a top-end option there. Other than that, no. I don't think you have anything that you're like, man, this is really helpful to put in front of a quarterback who you have to protect. He's not a guy who's going to run around and extend plays. You need to protect Derek Carr if you want to have any semblance of success this season. So we'll see. But no, that's just another wrench thrown into the offensive line machine that you're going to have to navigate. And personally, I'm going to miss James Hurst. I like James Hurst. You know, I've been pretty vocal that I don't know if he's a starting caliber offensive lineman. I think he's probably replacement level, but he's been a leader in that locker room. He's a guy who will always talk, even after the worst of losses. You can always get insight from James Hurst, right? He's a guy who just loved to talk. If he was a higher level player, he would have won the media award this year. It went to Tyrann Mathieu because he's a star player and it's a lot easier to vote for a star player. But James is always helpful. I'm going to miss James a lot. But yeah, that's basically the only bit of news that has come out over the last couple days as far as the Saints are concerned. Another bit of information that could potentially impact the Saints, Daniel Jeremiah, and a few reporters have gone at this, said, to summarize my last five phone calls, this is a quote from Daniel Jeremiah on Twitter, everyone is moving up for an offensive tackle. Now, is everyone including the Saints? That's a good question. But it sure sounds to me like, you know, we've spent a lot of time talking about this draft board and talking about quarterbacks, wide receivers, Dallas Turner, Byron Murphy, all these guys that you anticipate going prior to 14, right? Terrion Arnold, Quinyon Mitchell, Brock Bowers even. But what if that doesn't happen, right? What if there's chaos on Thursday and there's five trades into the top 15, all bypassing the Saints for tackles because the Saints either decide, hey, this is not a moment that we can justify trading up, or hey, maybe we trade down, maybe we do whatever. But what happens if, you know, this equation where, oh yeah, 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 all these tackles, one of them is going to be available. What if we're not? What if there's a run on tackles from 7 through 11 and Malik Nabers falls to you at 14? How do you bypass that? I have a hard time bypassing that if I'm the Saints. So, you know, that's one question that I look at that we really never discussed is how do you manage the draft board if one of these blue chip prospects, you have a really high grade on, falls to you? And I just think as an organization, you have to be able to pivot and say, yeah, we have a need at tackle, but this prospect is too good to pass up on. And I don't want the Saints to get into a situation where they feel like they have to draft a tackle. Now, what happens if you don't? What happens if you don't get a tackle at 14? But there are still guys on the board that you're interested in. I would endorse a all hands trade up to go get that tackle. But you can't put yourself in a situation where you look at the needed tackle and you take a lesser player because he's a tackle, right? Now, if you have a high grade on JC Latham and you have a higher grade on him than Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, that's one thing. Make that pick. If you don't, I don't anticipate the Saints doing that. So just prepare yourself for a scenario where there's a flurry of trades and someone who was not supposed to be there at 14 falls to 14. And the Saints take them. And everyone's up in arms because they did not take a tackle. That, to me, would be the appropriate approach. And that, to me, would indicate that they have a very high grade on that player and it is higher than any tackle available. But, again, you have 45, you have all those fits, you have future picks you can work in. If it takes a trade up from 45 to the back end of the first or early second to make sure you get a starting caliber tackle, maybe not a tackle that's ready right now. Maybe you're looking at an Amarius Mims or a Tyler Guyton. Graham Barton falls out of the first round. You can go get him, something like that. I think you have to do it. But, you know, I think your people are preparing you for a pretty crazy first round. And whether that looks like a trade up for a quarterback, say the Vikings get up in the top five to take JJ McCarthy, someone moves up to go grab Michael Penix, right? Maybe I know Mike Dettelier projected this trade, the Giants trading back into the first to go get Bo Nix. It's going to be interesting to see how that develops. But one way or another, the Saints have to be prepared. And as we all know, the Saints trade up. We're going to talk a lot more about that in the second segment here. Mickey Loomis went in on, you know, the philosophy involved there. And we'll talk more about that. But this is going to be a fascinating draft for the Saints. They need tackle help. They need guard help. They probably need an edge rusher. They probably need a wide receiver. I think they probably need an interior lineman on the defensive side of the ball too. So we're going to find out. We got about 24 hours. But all right, that's going to wrap up that segment. We're going to come back. We're going to hear from Mickey Loomis, get into a bunch of subjects from his press conference on Wednesday. This is Inside Black and Gold. We'll be right back.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And we're back. On Inside Black and Gold, I'm Jeff Nowak. A quick pod getting to you prior to the start of the NFL draft. This is Wednesday, about 4 o'clock that we're recording this. Draft starts on Friday evening. Saints picked 14th overall. But do they? Do they stay there? Or do they trade up? Now, Mickey Loomis would tell you that it's a possibility they trade down. And I think, hey, maybe this is the year. Maybe this is finally the year that you get a trade down. But... and there's always a but. The Saints have traded up, I want to say, 26 consecutive times. The last time they traded down was in 2007. They traded from the second to the third round with the Lions. You'd have to go even further back from that to find the last time they traded down in the first round with a first round pick. But hey, what is your philosophy on trading up? This is Mickey Loomis from his press conference on Wednesday, kind of going into that subject. Let's listen to it.
It might. Considering that, look, every year I say that we're willing to do either way, and then I'm like 15-0 going up, right? So it's kind of hard for me to keep saying that that I'm willing to trade back, and then I haven't done it for quite some time. So,
what do you think? Like, obviously, we know why you value trading up, but what is it that makes the concept of, oh, we'd like more lottery tickets, more swings at the plate? Why do you not feel like more is automatically better?
I think there are cases where dropping back makes some sense to get more picks. I just think in our case, most of the time, it's just been a move too far back. And, if you move back two or three or four spots, the probably the level of player is similar. If you're moving back, 8 to 10, I think oftentimes you're dropping down a class. If you believe in your board, you believe in the evaluations that your staff have done, then it's just hard for me to grasp getting a lesser player talent-wise. And so I really believe in the evaluation process that we do, and that's what makes it more difficult.
So, yeah, we've talked about this on the pod before, and, I think this is just reinforcing that. One of the reasons I know that this is Mickey Loomis' philosophy is because every year we ask him about it, and every year he tells us the same thing. And I think it's a pretty clear indicator and a pretty good explainer as to why the Saints never trade down. And it was that last bit right there. It's Mickey Loomis views trading down, at least trading down a certain distance, as accepting a lesser player. You feel like, hey, if we draft here or we move up, we can get a player of this tier, of this talent level. If we move back, we are saying, hey, we're going to get maybe multiple players of a lesser talent level. But at the end of the day, they view it as you're getting a player of a lesser talent level. Now, what he said there was interesting because, well, what if you end up in a situation where you can move back to the 15th or you can move back to like the 18th, 19th pick and you still can feel like you get that guy? That's another question. And he also talked a good bit about like, okay, sometimes when you trade up for a quarterback, there's a quarterback premium, right? It's not always the board. It's not the value of that pick versus the value of another pick. It's, hey, you want that quarterback? You're going to have to pay for him. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how that situation kind of develops this year. Now, I think it's about time that they adjust their draft philosophy to relate to their situation, which is you are not a serious title contender. And you're a playoff contender. Like, I think this team can be in the playoffs, but I don't think you're going to look at this team, at least in the preseason. Things can change in the season. Maybe you strike gold on a few picks and guys play at a level that you didn't really see last year, and you see a vision with the new offense, and maybe you do become a title contender. It's unlikely, but it could happen. But right now, in the draft, going into this next season, you cannot look at it that way. You have to be realistic about your situation, and I think it's about time they start accumulating assets. Now, that doesn't have to be in the first round. It could be in the second round, right? I think you want to get a third-round pick in this year's draft, but you can do that in a couple different ways. You can trade back in the second round, pick up an extra pick. You could, you know, trade back in the first round to pick up an extra pick. You could go in the back end of your draft board and move some of those assets up, pick up a third round pick. But I also think that you should be looking ahead and saying, hey, how can we accumulate assets for next year? How can we put ourselves in a better situation? So we're not going into the draft saying, hey, we want to trade up, but we don't have any pieces to throw at it. You want to trade up, get some assets first. You can't do that for this draft, but you can do that for next draft. You can do that for 2026. You can start picking up assets that you can push forward. And you know, you have 9 picks in this draft, 7 are on day 3. So we're gonna see. But he talked a little bit more about trading here, so let's hear it.
Are you actively looking at ways to get into rounds 3 and that big hole? Do you think about that? Like, how much are you thinking about the you know, from, what is it, 45 to 150, whatever it is? I mean, that's a big gap.
Yeah, it's a big gap. I wouldn't say that we're spending a lot of time thinking about that right now. You know, the way the draft is structured currently is that, you know, we do the first round on Thursday, and then we have, you know, the second and third on Friday. And so then, you know, we have a whole evening, a whole day, really, to strategize about moving into the third and fourth round. And look, part of that depends upon who are the players available. Do we really want to move up? And look, when you have 4 fifths, that gives us an opportunity to bump, you know, take a couple of those and bump it up. But we won't be thinking about that until we know who the players are that are going to be available. Is there someone that we've got really graded high that has dropped down, and man, let's put a target on them and you know, find a way to go get that player? Because that's what we've done historically, even in some of the later rounds. But that's not a process that you spend a lot of time right now. It's just there's so many variables. We're focused on, hey, what's going to happen in the first and second round right now with those first 2 picks.
When you go into the draft with, what is it, 7 day 3 picks, does that affect kind of how you evaluate the back end? You need to have a bigger pot of players that might be there with that much variance of who could be on the board?
You know, I don't think it changes. I don't think it changes. I mean, we have a formula for how many players need to be on the board for each one of our picks, and it's never failed. So, So that really hasn't changed much. I think what'll change is when we get to that day, when we get to day 3 and we've got all these picks, that hasn't been typically what we have, and who's to say that that's what we'll have when we get there?
Yeah, so a few things there. You know, what he talked about how you're not really looking at the day 3 trades in advance, and that makes sense to me. Like, you can't really plan for a trade on day 3 until you kind of see how the board develops. That's kind of what you saw play out last year, right? The Saints kind of stood pat. They didn't really make any moves in the first 2 days of the draft, and they didn't have a ton of picks, but they stuck with it. And then on day 3, before anything got going, you saw them trade up to the first pick of the fourth round for a guy who, now with James Hurst retiring, you know, you kind of look at like, okay, what does he have, right? And that's Nick Saldiveri. They also traded up into the fourth round for Jake Haener. Both guys didn't play a snap last year, but they're guys that you expect to have a role, maybe make an impact this year, and we're going to find out a lot more about these guys in training camp, the preseason, etc. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not doing their due diligence. And I think one thing that Mickey definitely does at a higher rate than maybe some other GMs around the league is he's making calls on values in the first round, right? Saints are always prepared to move up in the first round. And I think they do their due diligence on moving back. They just don't realistically consider it maybe as much as they should. But what Mickey said they do is they call up and say, okay, what's it going to cost to get to 13? What's it going to cost to get to 12? What's it going to cost to get to 11? What's it going to cost to get to 10? And I think you're probably doing that to a lesser extent in the second round. He said he usually go 10 picks up, 10 picks back to see what the values would be and what's realistic. Now, having that information is helpful. Going to that was my question in the second half, talking about, okay, all these seventh round picks or all these day three picks, you have seven of them. And the Saints have a process and they have a formula that, hey, we need to have this many picks, this many players that we're willing to pick so that when the board gets to us, one of those players is still there. It's Jeff Ireland's formula. They tweak it every year. But according to Mickey, it has never failed. They have never gotten in a situation where they got to their pick and there was not at least one player in that kind of cloud pod, whatever you want to call it, that they were willing to draft. I think one way that they have made sure that's the case is because they don't get to those picks. I mean, even last year, their sixth round pick, A.T. Perry, was a guy they traded Adam Trautman to get that selection. So I think you are looking at it and saying, we don't need to necessarily have dozens of extra options because of all of these picks that we have. And you can see it there. And I think he's just telling you, hey, we're not going to make seven picks on day three. Let's just be honest. Now, the question is, how early do you pull the trigger on some of these potential trades? Do you wait until day three and attack in the fourth round like you did last year? I think they're going to be very, very motivated to do that in round three this year. So maybe you aren't necessarily waiting until the second round is over to start looking at those trades, but you probably are waiting until the end of the first round to see who slipped and what the board is looking like in the second round before you make some of these decisions. I still think that the third round is where you're going to target. I still think that the trade I made in the mock is realistic. You traded your 3 fifth round comps, you traded one of your sixth rounders, and you traded a 2024 fourth rounder, I'm sorry, a 2025 fourth rounder to potentially go gut a guy in the third round. Again, mine was Mason Smith, but now knowing what we know about James Hurst, Christian Mahogany or a guard would make a ton of sense there too. But either way, that's kind of how they look at it, and that's how they're approaching a potential draft trade. Now, the one you look back at most recently is Adam Trautman. They traded the entire back half of their board in 2020 to go get him. I don't think you necessarily have to do that this year to get up into the third round. You could. Maybe if you include the entire back half of your board, you could get away without trading that future fourth. But I do think you need bodies, and I think this is a depth issue with this team that you need to start adding players. Now, one more quote we'll get into in this segment, and then we'll have another segment with some more specific quotes on some players, is about, okay, you got a new coaching staff. This is the first time in a long time, since 2006, that you are changing offensive systems. You've done it on the defensive side, but you have not done it on the offensive side. And so, okay, how do these new faces, these new voices impact the process? And how does the new offensive scheme impact the process? And this is what he had to say about that.
Yeah, well, I think the process is still the same. I think we are maybe trying to think about it a little differently. We've got, a couple people from that haven't been with us, that are with us, through this process. And so, I think we value their input, a little different view. Plus, the new coaching staff on the offensive side of the ball, they're all coming from, they're coming from different places and they have different perspectives. And, that's just good to have an infusion of different ideas.
How does that change the process with the new coaches? Just how's that conversation and just?
Yeah, it doesn't change the process. It's just, look, we value their opinion. We've always valued coaches' opinions. When we're making these decisions relative to the draft and free agents and yet they're coming from different places where they've done it differently, and so, we're trying to blend how we do it and what we ask of them with what they're used to, and it's been really good though.
When you're changing offensive systems, Lee, it's the first time you've done it in quite some time. How much weight does that add in terms of, you know, the players you might look at as in terms of, okay, we need players that can do this to run this type of offense,
yeah,
as opposed to other years where it's been?
Well, I think it's more nuanced than it is just these wholesale differences. It's just the nuance of what this system and what these coaches want the players to do. And that's, you know, it's part of the learning process for us is, hey, what exactly do our coaches value in terms of what they're asking the players to do? But it's a lot more nuanced. I mean, look, we got guys in our building that can do exactly what they want to do, and some better than others. And so that's part of the process that our coaches have to go through when they get these players on the field and they start talking about, you know, how they want to play and how they want them to play, and there'll be these little subtle differences.
There's a few things there that he went through. One is like the process itself. What is changing relative to how you evaluate and how you make decisions on draft day? I don't think that's going to change a ton, but you have a bunch of new people in place in terms of Clint Kubiak, Andrew Giannoco, right? John Benton, Rick Dennison, a lot of these offensive coaches that, you know, they've been around different draft methodologies, and they probably have opinions about, okay, how should we approach it? And you're getting insight from them. Now, I don't think you're going to change a ton there, but what I do think is going to affect this process specifically, maybe more so this year than another year or next year even, is when you're changing offensive systems. Just think of it like this. Like it's different because it's obviously different, but it's a little easier to visualize. Say your defensive system is changing from a 4-3 to a 3-4. Or you're changing from a more man cornerback scheme to a zone cornerback scheme, right? There are certain players who do that better than others. Now, there are some players who could do it either way, right? But, for example, on the defensive side, if you're going from a 4-3 to a 3-4, you now need outside linebackers where before you needed defensive ends. Some defensive ends can shift into that, but is that their prime usage? Or are you trying to pound a square peg into a round hole? So I think this year on offense, with a lot of these offensive picks, it becomes difficult to maybe evaluate what price tag you would put on one player versus another if it is a position where you don't feel like you have the players there that you need to run the system the way you do. Now, tight end is a really interesting one. Does Clint Kubiak feel like the tight ends in the building can do the things he needs them to do, right? How about running back? You know, how about offensive line in terms of the types of blocking that you're asking people to do that the system prior to this did not require? I think that's going to be, you know, if there's kind of weird picks in this draft, or you reach for a guy at a spot that you're like, well, why did they do that? I think at the end of the day, you're going to come back and there's going to be at least one or two picks that are scheme fit picks that may have not been on the board or may have not been as high on the board previously that are high on the board now. And you're going to say, well, why did they make that pick? And I think that's going to be why. And I think that's what you're getting into is you need to get input from Clint Kubiak, Andrew Giannoco, all these guys to evaluate where you need to make those changes. And it's not necessarily about the quality at the position. It is about a skill set that you need at certain positions. And I just think it's going to be interesting. We're going to look at this draft on Monday and we're going to say, okay, what were these picks? What were the fit picks that you made? And I think it's going to be a big part of it. But all right, this is Inside Black and Gold. We're going to wrap up. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about exceptions. Like, what does it take to pick a guy that is outside of your prototype? Because I'm just had a good answer on that. Also talked about Ryan Ramczyk, Marshawn Lattimore. We're going to get into it. This is Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. Stick around.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And we're back on Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. We're getting you ready for the draft on Thursday. We're recording this on Wednesday. So if anything breaks tonight, do not get mad at me. It is about 4:30. So we're reacting to what has happened, we're reacting to James Hurst's retirement, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, trades, whatnot. We're talking about Mickey Loomis's press conference on Wednesday. We went through trade up, trade down, new coach evaluations, stuff like that. This segment, I want to get into more specifics. The first being, okay, the Saints have prototypes. We know the Saints have prototypes. Maybe they need to change. Maybe they have changed. But one thing we do know is that this team believes in its scouting process. And if they don't see a player as fitting into that mold, they're not going to pick them. Unless there is some very, very strong redeeming quality that you feel this can be an exception to your rule. And so Mickey was asked about what it would take to do that. And this is what he said.
When you open the door to possibly consider someone that would be an exception, what's the study look like from there? You kind of like, okay, these guys with this arm length have done that. Like, how do you guys kind of break that
down? Yeah, it's just so different depending on the position. Here's the description. If it's an exception, do they walk on water? So you define that however you want to. You know, you got to walk on water.
Are there traps that GMs can fall into, like thinking you can fix the exception? Like, what are some things that you've been doing this for so long that you kind of are, we have to be careful to avoid this? Or?
Well, I think we're all confident enough in our abilities. And by all, I mean coaches, scouts, GMs, you know, all of us are confident enough in our abilities that we think we can fix something. And but there's some things that I think are just really difficult to fix. And I think over the years, that's where, you know, experience comes into play, is that, man, it's the exceptions, right? There's always exceptions. And I think sometimes you fall into this trap of, well, there's this one exception, so this works too. But I think it's really, I'm not explaining this correctly, but I think that's the trap that you can fall into.
Yeah, and again, like that's true. And I think last year we went through this with a guy, Nolan Smith. You know, everyone was like, well, why didn't the Saints take Nolan Smith, blah, blah, blah. And he fell all the way to wherever. And I think it comes back to he just doesn't fit the prototype of what you're looking for at defensive end. He's a little too small, you know, he's not heavy, he doesn't have the build that you're looking for. And again, maybe that needs to change. Maybe you do need to go select more athletic defensive ends. But if you have a process and you trust your scouting, then that's how you're going to go. And I think the player that I look at in this draft, that if he fell to 14, we would hear people clamoring, take Dallas Turner. Why didn't you take Dallas Turner? He got picked two picks later. And I think it's going to come back to that. Does he walk on water? Is he so far above and beyond as a prospect that you can look past the fact that he's a little smaller, he's a little lighter in the keister, if you will, a little lighter in the trunk than you might be used to? And I understand it. I do. And I think that's going to be, if the Saints pass, if Dallas Turner drops to 14, which I don't think he will, but if he does and the Saints pass on him, I think that's why. And so keep that in mind. This is a team that has a process. They trust it. You can argue that it's not a good process or it has not been effective and they should change it. But that's what it comes down to. You have a prototype. You're not making exceptions unless they walk on water, as Mickey Loomis said. Now, looping back around to the tackle conversation, Mickey Loomis did give an update on Ryan Ramczyk. It was really a non-update, but I did want to play it, so here you go.
I know, just considering some of the uncertainty around Ryan Ramczyk, how important is it for you guys to know that they have a really good sense of where that's going to lead going into draft day, just considering it's a starting tackle?
I mean, look, it is what it is. I don't There's a lot of things we don't have control over right now. So, I don't think we're spending a lot of time thinking about that specifically.
Do you have a good sense of where it is right now?
I think we do, yeah.
Is it similar to what Dennis said last time you talked about it? Like, has anything changed since?
Yeah, no, I don't think anything's changed. You know, we got a lot of time left.
I know. Do you have a positions that you would still say are like must right now? And is offensive tackle a position that you would say is sort of a must at this point?
Yes, I'd rather not discuss what we think is, you know, yes, in terms of, yeah, there are some musts on our board yet, some tags we haven't filled, just like there's some needs and there's a few wants, and but I'd rather not get into anything specific.
Yeah, how's Trevor Penning's offseason gone to this point?
Yeah.
You'll still view him as tackle? Is there a position that, maybe another position you would
Yeah, I think it's gone well, and look, there's a lot of off season left here, and you know, we have a new offensive staff, a new offensive line coaches, and I think they're anxious to get to work with him once we're able to get on the field.
Yeah, so I'll go ahead and answer that for Mickey. Tackle is a must. You're going to have to address it, whether you address it in the draft or not. It's a must in terms of addressing it, because the answer you get there from Mickey is they know where he's at in terms of where his progress is, but not much has changed. And until you get positive momentum from Ryan, you have to at least approach the situation as if he is not going to play. And I don't think he's going to play. Now, there is a lot of time left, right? Yeah, we're at the draft, right? We haven't gone through OTAs. He's not going to be there for OTAs. We haven't gone through OTAs, minicamp. It won't be until training camp that we really get a picture of exactly where Ryan is. If he's out there for training camp, then you'll feel great. You'll feel great about it in terms of his ability to at least start this season. But even if you get to that point, you cannot reliably go into this season saying, hey, Ryan's going to be there for the duration. Because how could you? You saw what happened last year. Even if he is in a situation where you manage it, you give him his rest days, it could still crop up on him and keep him out. So, of course, it's a must. Now, I think left tackle, the plan is to play Trevor Penning. Now, hopefully, you don't have to bench Trevor again. And I think there's a situation where you have to let him play through some of his young player issues. And hopefully, they aren't significant enough that Derek Carr doesn't make it through it this season because he gets hurt. But I do think you at least have a plan there, and you're going to see how it goes. I don't think you have a plan at right tackle right now. And I don't think that plan can be, we're going to start Landon Young. As much as I like Landon Young, he's a backup. He is a NFL backup. He is similar to James Hurst. If he's a quality depth player on your roster, but if he's your starter, you're in trouble. So, you know, Mickey's not going to say it there. Of course he's not. This every year we go through this. He's like, he's going to answer in whatever way he answers, but he's not going to give us a ton of information. That said, tackle is a must. But we didn't really get much on Ryan there. And I don't expect we will until camp, when they have to at least address the fact that he's not there, if he's not there. And we'll see how that goes. But one more clip, one more player that I want to talk about. And it was kind of a funny interaction, because we're going to talk about Marshawn Lattimore. And he's going to get asked whether he's going to be on the team in 2024. And I am surprised I don't see more headlines out there kind of going off of the first answer. Maybe it's because there was more context and people paid attention. But either way, this is how that answer went.
Mickey, do you feel like pretty confident that Marshawn Lattimore is going to be on this roster this year?
Yeah.
And if there was any trade discussion, I mean, does that kind of end with the draft or not necessarily?
Yeah, no, listen to that. It's not specific to Marshawn, so there's always conversations about all kinds of players, so it's not any different.
Just to clarify on Lattimore, do you approach those types of questions with every player we have? I'm always going to say that they're going to be on our roster this early. Like, if the answer was something other than yes, would you say
yeah,
that?
What do you think?
Now it's going to be a headline.
Yeah, I just...
You know, he's going to be on the roster in 2024, so it's just...
Yeah, that's not what that wasn't my answer. My answer, he was asking me a question. I'm trying to avoid it because I let's be honest. You know, you guys know me. I don't like talking about specific players. You ask questions, and I you have the right to ask the question, but you know, listen, everybody's tradable. You know, just depends on, you know, the offer that you get, right? And yet, it's not very common. I'm not not one who likes to do a lot of trades. You know, I don't like trading players that have been contributors for us. I like, you know, maximizing our roster with the guys we got. But we've made trades before, so. There's too many what-if things here, right? If there was something imminent, I still wouldn't tell you, but.
You kind of laugh sometimes that there's, like, it always gets out there, like, oh, you could trade this player and get a draft.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, not any specific player, but that would be trading an already established player for someone who could be just as good as that player, but maybe not. So when you see that, just with any star player, I guess, does it kind of make you laugh because trading something established for the unknown, I guess.
Yes. But there's also this, I think there's an assumption that there's not as many opportunities as people think to either trade players that you have or acquire players. There's not nearly as many opportunities as you think. There's a lot of discussion, not a lot of discussion, there's discussion about things, but there's not that many opportunities that come along, I don't believe. So I think there's an assumption that you can just pick up the phone and trade anybody and trade for anybody, and that's just not the case. There's a lot of variables. The salary cap makes it difficult. The replacement. If you trade away a player, you got to replace them, and there's just a lot of variables that you've got time. We've got time and a lot of coaching and invested in these guys. And look, we want them to be successful here.
So I appreciate the honesty there in terms of, hey, I'm not going to answer your question, and I want to make sure you know that I didn't answer your question, because, yeah, he's not answering that question. Now, I do think he gave, in spite of himself, an honest answer there, which is anyone's tradable. And that means, there is an option that you go through that, hey, okay, we found a trade that is acceptable for Marshawn Lattimore, and we're going to make it. But, you know, and I've said this several times, one of the biggest goals I set for the Saints this offseason is not necessarily trade Marshawn or don't trade Marshawn. It is to make sure that from a locker room perspective, you are able to say no to trades, because that is the only way you're going to get a representative value for Marshawn, because you get into training camp, another team that feels like it's got a chance to win this year loses somebody due to injury, or doesn't feel like they feel like they're one player away and that player is an elite cover corner. And they look at it and say, hey, okay, yeah, we'll give up some assets. We'll take them off your hands and we'll do whatever. But the deal has to make sense. And I think that's kind of what Mickey is getting at there. Like, if the trade's not there, the trade's not happening. And you can't just go into the offseason saying, we're going to trade this guy, find the deal. Because that deal doesn't always exist. And when you see teams get fleeced, like the Saints did for C.J. Gardner-Johnson, it's not always because you wanted to trade that guy. It's because you had to trade that guy. L'Jarius Sneed, the Chiefs got nothing for him. It's because you had to trade him. It's because you weren't going to pay him, and he knew that, and it was going to become a problem. The Saints had to trade C.J. Gardner-Johnson because they weren't going to pay him, and it was a problem. It had already become a problem, and everyone knew that, and that's why the trade value was what it was. But I don't think that there's going to be a trade made of Marshawn Lattimore prior to the draft. I think it was always going to be, hey, let's get closer to camp and see what develops. But one way or another, it's on the table. Whether Mickey wants to say it or not, it's on the table and we're going to figure it out. But it's not going to impact Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And hopefully they have reconciled that situation to a degree that you could go into camp and say, hey, there's no deal. We're going to figure it out. And it's going to affect Alante Taylor. It's going to affect Paulson Adebo. I had a couple say, okay, well, I had a couple people ask, hey, what about Quinyon Mitchell? What about Terry Arnold? What if those guys drop? And that's a tough one for me, because I do think it affects that situation. Because if you go out and you draft a top end corner at 14, you expect that guy to start. So who's he starting over? Starting over Paulson? Is he starting over Marchand? Right? You already have Alante Taylor shoved into the slot, a position that I don't think is his ideal position, but you're making it work. You add another cornerback to that equation, and I think you do have to trade Marchand. So we'll see how it goes. But that's going to wrap up this episode of Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. We'll be coming at you hopefully with a hit after the Saints make their first round pick. We'll be doing a full wrap-up show on WWL on Sunday, and that's going to be kind of our I'm going to fold that into a podcast episode like we did last year to kind of give you all of our thoughts on the entire draft as it was. Just going to be tough to get anything done Friday to Saturday because it's a quick turnaround. It's late night to early morning. Got to host pregame or pre-draft shows on WWL. So we'll do what we can. Appreciate everyone sticking with us. It's a very busy time of year, and we do what we can. I do want to plug one last time. Make sure to check out the pre-draft show on WWL AM 870, FM 105.3, and on the Odyssey app. It's a great show. There's so much content in that show, and I almost never have enough time to do as much with it as I want to because we got Jeff Ireland, we got Mickey Loomis, you get Dennis Allen, but more interestingly, you'll get Clint Kubiak and Rick Dennison for the first time. We get to really hear their vision for this offense, for the offense they're trying to transform this season with Derek Carr and Alvin Kamara and Taysom Hill and all these guys. So make sure to check that out. Again, this is Inside Black Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeff_Nowak. Make sure to subscribe, rate, review wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks everyone for listening. As always, it's draft time, baby. Let's do it. All right. Who dat? Go Saints. Peace out, y'all.